Cecil Taylor will be my guest at 11 o'clock from a May 1986 New Yorker, Whitney Balliot, writing. He says that Cecil Taylor and Ornette Coleman are the nominal heads of the jazz avant-garde, but they are very different. Coleman refuses to record or play in public unless he's paid handsomely. Taylor, until recent years, often played for pennies when he was asked to play at all. Coleman's music is accessible, but he is loath to share it. Taylor's music is difficult, and he's delighted to share it. Taylor's selections are rarely shorter than an hour. They don't fit easily into nightclubs. He overruns the standard length of a set. He transfixes his listeners, making them forget to order drinks, and his attack does things to pianos that make nightclub owners weep. For all this, Taylor's become something of a star in Europe, and he is at least a cult here. He's largely indescribable. His playing has provoked a flood of similes and metaphors. He's been said to resemble Niagara Falls, a volcano, a great river, thunderheads, a high wind, a cannonade, a stampede. Whitney Balliot, in his words on Cecil Taylor. We'll begin our set this morning a little early, because selections are often long, and it takes certainly more than an hour to present the music of Cecil Taylor, rarely heard on radio. This piece is called Pontos Cantados, written by Cecil Taylor. Point one, Kluke at the top of the stairs. Kluke being Kenny Clark, of course. Point two, Question. This is from an album called One Night with Blue Note. It features many of the Blue Note artists, great Blue Note artists like McCoy Tyner, Jackie McLean, Benny Wallace, and Cecil Taylor. This was recorded in 1985 at Town Hall in New York City. Cecil Taylor, solo piano, next on Morning Becomes Eclectic. Thank you. Cecil Taylor, in an album that was recorded as part of a Blue Note festival in 1985, Town Hall in New York City. That was called Pontos Cantados. And I'm very pleased to have Cecil Taylor in the studio this morning. Cecil Taylor, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Why do you play music the way that you do? Why do you play piano the way that you do?
Ha ha ha. Music has saved my life. It called me. I did not have any conscious choice of it. There was a piano in the house and there was music in the family. And I just decided, or it decided for me, you know.
When did you start playing piano? Was piano your first instrument?
Well, yes. Mother had taken me to Museum of Natural History, which I didn't find very pleasing. But she also took me to hear orchestras. She took me a lot of places. And soon after seeing perhaps Chick Webb or Duke Ellington, I just asked her one day, could I have piano lessons? She was my first piano teacher.
You once said that playing was not a question of energy, but rather a question of spiritual transformation. Could you elaborate on that?
Well, in a way, I perhaps already have when I said that it has saved my life. It is now perhaps a celebration of all that is living. Music is more than just a musical note or a musical construction. It is all the beautiful poets that have, poets meaning painters, dancers, whatever, that have affected your life and made an impression upon you. Also, it is implicit in the investigation of other poetic forms. There is a history there. In the literature poetics of the form, but there is also the dimension of the culture and all the dynamics in the culture. Then there is the magical idea of mystery, spirit, the religiosity as excerpted from the dogmatic. So what has happened over the years, my interest in all of these things have sort of coalesced into, I think, a music that has continued to develop. And I don't think of it necessarily as a music, but the energy of life that chose this body temple to pass through, it is a celebration of all of the things that is most beautiful.
I remember reading also that you you said that your music has really more to do with ancestor worship and magic than with any sort of logic.
Yes, the spiritual,
and that's obviously what you're getting at.
But what you get a sense of that through the reading of certain material from other cultures, the idea of the shaman, you know, and then you begin to relate that to the poets and great figures that inspire you here.
You'll work on a piece for a long time before you'll play it. And I'm wondering, how do you decide whether a piece is ready to be played? How do you decide whether it's good after you've played it? Are there times where you feel like you haven't made it?
Yeah. Two different things. I think the music always instructs you. And then once you play it, the music has a life of its own. And it determines the longevity, the acting longevity in the repertoire.
We're going to listen next to a concert that you recorded in Milan, Italy, in 1985 with some Hungarian and Italian musicians, a German musician, sort of an international band. I guess that's why you call it Orchestra of Two Continents, huh? And we're going to hear a piece called Winged Serpent. My guest on Morning Becomes Eclectic is Cecil Taylor. He plays at Catalina's this week through Sunday evening. performance of Winged Serpent by Cecil Taylor. The album is called Cecil Taylor Segments 2, Orchestra of Two Continents. Some of the people performing on this 1985 Soul Note studio recording include Enrico Rava and Tomas Stanko. The late Jimmy Lyons playing as well. He was a member of the Cecil Taylor unit for 26 years. Frank Wright, John Chikai, Gunter Hampel, Karen Borka, William Parker, and Rashid Baker, as well as Andre Martinez, and of course Cecil Taylor leading the band. Cecil Taylor is my guest on Morning Becomes Eclectic. Cecil, you've been interested in dance, and I guess dance is a part of your performance, on and off the piano bench. And you've also, less people know, I guess that you've collaborated with Mikhail Baryshnikov, haven't you?
Yeah, we did a performance three times. The choreographer was a man that was in the Balanchine Company. The actual performance, it was a duo with Heather Watts and Baryshnikov, and the piano was on the stage.
Do you feel misunderstood by the press, by listeners? An old question, isn't it?
I feel the audiences now, most of the time, are just wonderful extensions of the music. You know this when, if you're playing a triple pianissimo passage and you don't even hear anyone breathing, and when you finish playing, there's that response. Or maybe one or two people come up to you after the performance and you look in their eyes. That's... Everyone should find what is beautiful for them.
Your relationship with with people who have followed your music is certainly a personal and direct one. People don't stumble upon your music by accident, do they? By tuning in an errant radio station.
If the station is errant enough, they might.
The European audiences have always... they demand you more, and you have far more bookings there than in America.
Yes. I've learned the art form has been developed a great deal in Europe and Japan. The building of the architecture takes place here, as it should, but the music, the creation, takes on its own life in other places where you get a chance to do it. And you also see other cultures, see other people who are living, doing many wonderful things. It's a residual that you get if you live long enough, and then they ask you to come, and it's like a vacation.